decide that I should live as freely as those who live outside. Cause we also are entitled to the rights to be endowed. And when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or wilkincpas.com.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing, featuring women's clothing, jewelry, accessories, and gifts with a focus on U.S. made and certified fair trade natural fiber clothing since 1984. Gazelle is located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont and at gazellenaturalfiberclothing.com.
And yes, you are tuned to KBOO Portland, and here comes Crossing East.
Major funding for the series is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from PRI, Public Radio International.
This is Crossing East. Our stories, our history, our America.
Chinese ships were incredibly seaworthy, and it's not surprising that they survived all the way across the Pacific.
Coolie, the two characters, mean bitter strength.
But there are so many people up and down this coast that are of Hawaiian descent, as I am, but they don't know.
So they decided to build their a la Filipino villages with their houses, just like the ones that you'll find in the southern part of the Philippines now. So they had that built along the bayous and the marshes of Louisiana.
I'm George Takei. Crossing East begins with First Contacts when we return.
I'm Dee Mae Roberts with the Crossing East music feature. Guitarist Angelo Pizarro lives in Seattle, Washington. He says to the untrained ear, Filipino guitar can sound much like Spanish flamenco.
It's pretty close, because sometimes they think I'm playing flamenco, but I'm just trying to play my Filipino music. Yeah, flamenco is more like... something like... but it's a Filipino, it's more melodic one, you know.
The Philippines were a Spanish territory from 1565 to 1898. Spanish culture and language became part of the Filipino experience, and many Filipino traditions and words made their way into Spanish culture. Some words remain in Spanish, like bolo, pantalon, and sambaguita.
Sambaguita is the Philippine national flower. They call the song sambaguita, and you'll hear the melody. I'll play a little bit.
Angelo Pizarro's father and brothers taught him to play in a small string group called a rondala in the Filipino style.
I guess that's how I learned that, you know, that sound, where it's like a tremolo picking, like, you know, like that. Yeah. You know, like that. So I kind of like, I like that part, and so I try to keep that as my Filipino root.
In the Harana, a traditional Filipino song style, a man sings to a woman under her window. The Harana was successful if she invited men or if she sang along with him.
They played like when they do the Harana, a serenade. That's when... a man go and serenade a woman and her at her home, and it's called My True Love. My father taught me a song called Naranyag Abulan, which means bright moon. Back in the Philippines, I was born in Santa Maria, Ilocos Sur, south of Manila. You know, it was fun growing up there. You know, there's the plaza where they have sometimes the fiesta.
Each Filipino barrio or community has a yearly fiesta in honor of their patron saint. For these parties, barrios find DJs who can play both traditional and modern music. Angelo Bizarro's father was a popular DJ.
That he brought me to every barrios in the town just to do their functions, their special events. Well, growing up in the Philippines, he played the saxophone. He would play music for the dance people that would do the, you know, like folk dancing. He would do it live. And he would, I was amazed at him when he just writes the music just out of his head and then play it back. That thing I cannot do.
There's the Filipino national folk dance. Dancers jump through moving bamboo poles, mimicking the tinikling bird.
Tinikling is the name of that dance. So they would dance like between the sticks and those ones, between the poles. And that's where they try to not to get their ankles caught.
Today, Angelo fuses Filipino folk with jazz, just the way Spanish and Filipino mix together.
I play those things where I play, and they seem to like it more than when I'm just playing jazz. You know, like, you know.
Angelo Pizarro's latest CD is Serendipity. Find out more on crossingeast.org. This Crossing East music feature was produced with Sarah Caswell Colbert and is made possible by the National Endowment for the Arts. I'm Demi Roberts.
I'm your host, George Takei, and this is Crossing East, our stories, our history, our America. Think of the first Asians in America, and images of railroad builders, gold miners, and laundry workers come to mind. But Asians came east from Asia to explore the new continent long before there was an America. Sailors and adventurers from China, Japan, the Philippines, and Hawaii boarded ships heading east in the 16th century. Some scholars speculate even earlier. Depending on how far back you want to go, it's safe to say that Asians have a long history of crossing east to America. We present First Contacts, Chapter 1, The Bering Strait. The middle of the Ice Age, 20,000 years ago. Immense sheets of polar ice locked up so much water, the sea level dropped. It was a time of land bridges. Britain to Europe, Tasmania to Australia, and Asia to America. For a few thousand years, Alaska and Siberia were joined by land, and people walked across the dry, cold grasslands. They hunted mammoth and muskox across the 55-mile tract of land now called the Bering Strait. These were the ancestors of the native peoples of the Americas, and they were crossing east from Asia. Stories and legends abound of first contacts between Native Americans and Asians before the 1500s. Japanese and Chinese pottery have been found on America's coast.
Shipbuilding practices on both sides of the ocean show similarities. Chinese tales speak of men who traveled to Fusang, the land of the extreme east. Some claim that was Mexico. Native peoples of Alaska stayed in relatively frequent contact with their Siberian neighbors, and new waves of Siberian peoples occasionally traveled the 55 miles to Alaska, rejuvenating the population. But it is when the United States was first defining itself as a new nation that the recorded history of Asians in America begins. Chapter 2, Unsung Sailors, by Sarah Caswell Colbert. The Lady Washington is a replica of an 18th century sailing vessel. The ship travels the length of the West Coast all year round. The mostly volunteer sailors on board live and work, much as did the sailors of old, belaying lines, unfurling sails, climbing the riggings, navigating with a compass. The first recorded Chinese in North America arrived as sailors. They came as men before the mast on Spanish galleons, as sailors to East Coast ports, and as shipbuilders to the Northwest Coast. China has a strong seafaring tradition, and in the 1700s, long before the California Gold Rush drew opportunists from all over the world, it was the sailors from China who made their way to the new country of America.
We came mostly from the Guangdong province in China, on the southeast coast. Our fathers were fishermen and our grandfathers were shipbuilders, but we were adventurers. We wanted to see the world. When I was a child, I heard great stories of the Chinese treasure ships many centuries ago. I loved to hear tales of Chinese Admiral Zheng Ho and his sailing adventures from Africa to Australia. Every country wanted to trade with China. Then they came to China to get our fine silk, furs, cotton, and porcelain. And the British hungered for our tea.
The maritime tradition and the shipbuilding tradition has been very strong in China and in Asia. In fact, Asia was immersed in a vast intra-Asian trade that would extend into Africa and, of course, in ancient times, through the Silk Route into the Mediterranean.
99% of the people in the 18th century, early 19th century, never went more than 20 miles from home. These people were given a chance to go see the world. It would have been a rough life, but it would have been a good life. As a sailor, you got three meals a day. You didn't live with your farm animals.
Hands take the main topsail.
When the British and American sailing ships came, I went to the docks. I wanted a chance to explore, to leave China, to have adventures. I offered myself as a translator. I heard other men offer themselves as carpenters and laborers.
It would have taken 8 months to a year to get to the Northwest Coast from Boston. Then it took 8 weeks to 10 weeks to get to Hawaii, 4 months to get to China, depending on wind, waves. The original Lady Washington was crewed with between 12 and 15 men. Sailors would jump ship in China and go to a homeward-bound ship. They would replace those sailors with Chinese.
Their ships were so different from ours. Their language, too. But we all understood the language of sailing.
Chinese ships were incredibly seaworthy. They had watertight compartments before Western civilization. They had batten sails. They had balanced rudders. They had the compass. And it's not surprising that they survived all the way across the Pacific. The Japanese official was educated enough that he also knew Chinese, so that they had a common language to talk.
When the Lady Washington landed in Japan, Captain John Kendrake tried to sell furs there, and I had to translate for him. He was lucky he had Chinese on board. I wrote the Japanese officials a letter saying, "This ship belongs to the Red Hairs from a land called America. Its cargo includes copper, iron, and 50 guns. In going from flower country to skin grass country, we do not pass your land, but we have drifted here under the stress of wind and wave. There are 100 persons aboard this ship. The captain's name is Kendrake.
3 days after Kendrake left, the Shogunate army showed up to boot him out of Japan. So Kendrake was lucky then.
I think the very first Asians who enter into the United States come into the ports of the Northeast through trading lanes that are ultimately exchanging goods with different parts of Asia. This country was actually quite poor. It was just surviving the Revolutionary War. New York City, for example, was in great debt. And it sought to build up its wealth through trade with China. As people were jumping ship or migrating from place to place looking for a better life, they began to find that places like New York City and Baltimore and Boston would have a port district made up of the working people tied to the ships and the trade. They would be people from all around the world. So I think these port districts created port cultures that were quite intermingled, and in fact the forerunner to what we now think of as multicultural America.
Few of us had tombstones when we died. So many died at sea. But in Boston, there is a cemetery with a tombstone that says, "Here lies interred the body of Chow Mandarin, a native of China, aged 19 years. Chow died in 1768. He died on board the Mac of Boston when the masthead fell on him. His own captain buried him and gave him a tombstone."
We have bits and pieces of information about Chinese sailors who end up staying in New York City, marrying with Irish women oftentimes, and having children, having bank accounts, having property. So it's clear that there